We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike Chinn, let's go. Hour four of the program. We're going until 10 o'clock tonight. We've had a fun time. We've had a bunch of great guests on the show as well, and that trend will continue. We haven't spent as much time talking about the Cubs as I would have liked because of circumstances, but now we have that opportunity to do so. Bruce Levine covers baseball for us here at The Score. You can hear him on Inside the Clubhouse this Saturday coming up at 9 a.m. Follow him on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. If you want the latest of what's going on. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Good evening, Lawrence. It's a very good evening for the Chicago Cubs. It's been a nice little run that they've been on here since the train wreck in Cincinnati. They've been playing some good baseball here and doing it in a way that is pleasing the manager and the hitting coach as well.
Why is that?
Well, if you're watching games, you're watching a team that pretty much has been synonymous for run production via home run balls over the past 3.5 years, and that is not the case right now. They hit the home run. Schwarber hit a home run today, but most of the runs have been coming via the driving the ball to the opposite field, hitting the ball where they ain't, and basically taking line drive level swings, something that's been preached by Chili Davis since he came in to take over for John Maley this year.
And it seems like there are a lot of guys who are seeming to take to this, and I know that we've talked about this before, but what's happened with Jason Hayward is pretty incredible. What does he say about the last 6 or 7 weeks of his offensive game?
Nothing. He refuses to respond to the fact that, oh, my God, I'm a major league hitter and I can play this game. Jason's the type of guy that has been supremely confident, and not cocky, because certainly he didn't have all that much to be cocky about hitting-wise, but supremely confident from the day he walked in until, through all the struggles and all the ups and downs, he has been one consistent man. And you have to admire that in anybody in any walk of field, Lawrence, who walks through fire and brimstone and is able to stay the same person and stay a level course. This is a unique guy and somebody to be admired, I think, as a person as well as a professional player, because regardless how bad it got for him offensively, and, when you have 640, OPS or 670 OPS a couple years in a row, and you've been hired to be one of the big guns on offense and be a all-around complete five-war player, this could be devastating to a guy that didn't have the strong character. So from the perspective of what Epstein and Hoyer did bringing him in, they knew who they were getting as far as a character and a strong personality to fit in with the rest of the group. But to watch this guy, be able to function now, Lawrence, by simply using his hands. You have 6'5", 6'6" guys. How many in the history of baseball over 6'4" have had long, successful careers as hitters? And the answer is very few. Probably under 25 or 30 guys that are 6'5" and over that have had long, successful careers. And a lot of the scouts and the baseball people you talk to say their arms are too long. They get jammed. Their swings are long. They don't use their wrists and hands. Jason Hayward is using his wrist and hands like he hasn't for 3 or 4 years. And that is what he's done. He's standing further back in the box. He's standing further over toward first base, and he's given his long arms and his body a chance to get to baseballs with the head of the bat by using his hands and wrist. It sounds pretty easy, Lawrence, but believe me, this technique and taking some of the funkiness out of his swing was nothing easy, for sure. But nonetheless, for now, he's certainly been a very productive player for the Cubs.
Will he talk about his defense? Because that sliding catch today early on, I think would have changed the game. Because I think that that's a triple. I think it puts Hendricks in a whole lot of trouble early on in that inning if Hayward doesn't come up with that. And it gave Hendricks an opportunity to get himself together and kind of calm things down.
No doubt. Defense was king today. Probably gets lost in the shuffle. But, you know, that play, the great double play that Rizzo started on the bunt, the way that they came up with a couple other sensational plays. That's been the essence of this little run that they've been on. But addressing what you said, you know, directly, Hayward 15 years ago could not have made that catch. The reason, not because he's not the great defensive athlete and probably one of the best right fielders I've seen in, I don't know, since Andre Dawson. It's because they didn't have the padding under the wall there 15 years ago. And that would have been devastating for him to be able to slide into that wall there and control his body and still slam into bricks. So, the ballpark being upgraded has helped. But just, you know, the body control of running full out and then stopping and being able to make that catch and stopping the impact of the wall there is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I kept thinking, like, what as I'm watching him, Bruce – like him having to measure his steps and understanding where he could slide safely to make the catch, to me, is incredible.
Yeah. The Cubs are blessed with two or three sensational baseball athletes. And the third one, you know, I'll put Rizzo in there because he is really exceptional by the way he works at his trade and thinks his trade. You know, Baez might be the most exciting defensive player since, you name it, Robbie Alomar, Omar Vizquel. You go back into your time machine and name me
Ichiro.
Ichiro, yeah. I mean, name me a more exciting defensive player on the Chicago Cubs that you can remember.
I can't.
Okay. I mean, Sean Dunston was exciting in many ways, and a lot of it was because the athleticism had to make up for his lack of baseball instinct. So he had the arm, he had the speed. You know, he played like an NBA player at shortstop. This is a sensational guy. So getting back to Hayward, you got two of the more sensational baseball athletes playing defense for you every day. And Rizzo, although is not as maybe not having the best defensive year that he's had in the past, has been sensational nonetheless as well because of their instincts and their way that they've thought this play over hundreds of times in their heads. So when they see it, when it presents itself, Lawrence, it's already been filed away as, this is easy, this is what I do. I'm fielding this bunt, I'm throwing to third, we're going to throw to first and get a double play on the bunt. I mean, those are the exceptional defensive players. Those are the exceptional baseball athletes that you get to watch on a daily basis with the Cubs.
How did you feel about Hendricks' start today? And I know that we talked a little bit about it earlier this week, but what do you think has been going on with him? Like, it looked like he took a few miles per hour off the fastball today to try and get command of it.
He just doesn't have any good sink on his fastball right now. I mean, you see that ball hanging up there. He even took away the curve. I think he only threw two today, and there were a couple of good ones, because he's hanging everything high. You know, this is a guy that was hugely successful and a near Cy Young Award winner in 2016 by continuously hitting the lower quadrants on the outside and inside corner against hitters for strikes. Balls that are just getting nubbed, you know, on the infield, popped up. I mean, he was, you know, near perfect in 16. Last year, injury-plagued season, came back, had a pretty good second half after he came off, you know, was less than the second half, was the last 6 weeks. So he is, you know, he's in this funk where he's leaving balls up. Fastball command is what he says. Fastball command is what it is. You know, you just can't pitch 88 to 90 up in the zone with in this type of weather. Maybe in April and May you can, Lawrence, but not now, and not see that ball driven out of the ballpark or off the wall or in a gap. So he spoiled everybody by being as fine as he was with his command, and it just hasn't been there this year at all. So he battled through five. Joe got him out of there. You know, they ended up getting that win. But it's still a challenge for him, and he has to continue to get back to being the better-than-average pitcher that he has been over the last 3 years.
Talking with Bruce Levine about the Cubs, they're on a five-game win streak after their 5-3 win today over the Tigers. And look, the competition that they've played over the last five games, the Twins and the Tigers, Tigers have been in a really rough stretch where they lost 12 out of 14 games in the last 3 weeks. And then you have the Twins who are moving backwards right now when people thought maybe they were ready to take a step forward. That being said, the Cubs have got to win those games too to try to keep tethered to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. So, you're right. I mean, look, Lawrence, at the end of 2016, do you remember the weak sisters that the Cubs beat on their way to 103 wins? I don't think anybody remembers that stuff except when you're going through this and going, you know what? They better beat these teams because they're the weak teams in the league and they can get themselves some momentum going. I remember last year when they were at their lowest form, they lost six in a row in California. That was the low point for them as they finished 5.5 out by the All-Star break and then came back with a 13-4 run, taking over within 2.5-3 weeks the division for good. So I don't know if you remember that, but you're right in saying, you know, these are the games they should win. But with their starting pitching being as iffy as it's been over the past month or so, other than John Lester, you can't take any of these games for granted. That's why the beauty of the way they've been moving the ball around, as Joe calls it, hitting the ball to all fields and playing defense has really helped them.
We've talked a lot about Jason Hayward and his resurgence. We've talked about Chris Bryant and whether or not he's going to be healthy enough to play soon. A guy that you and I haven't talked a lot about, and I'd love to get your thoughts on, is Ben Zobrist. I am shocked, honestly, that at his age he was able to have a bounce back season like this. What is Zobrist and the folks over at the Cubs said is the reason why we're seeing a really great offensive season from Zobrist?
A healthy back, and we saw it in spring training and early in the year, put him out for a while, but a healthy back and a healthy wrist so he could hit right-handed. He couldn't hit right-handed at all last year after a wrist injury. So the last day of the season, Lawrence, I go up to his locker. You know, it's October 17th. The Dodgers just embarrassed the Cubs. And, you know, everybody leaves, and he said, I can't wait to get to start working out for next season. He said, I'm going to take a week off, and that's it. He said I have a lot of things to prove to myself and live up to what is expected of me. And, you know, that is the committed athlete that Zobrist was. He was just so you know, hell-bound on getting a start, knowing that he wasn't done in his mind and that he was going to do everything workout-wise to be prepared for 2018. And he's, as you said, Lawrence, it's really nice to watch him again because Joe can put him in high-leverage situations again, and he's going to come through. You know, he has the most intelligent bats of hardly, maybe there's 5-7 guys that have the most intelligent bats. He doesn't always make a tremendously hard contact, but there's a lot of thought that goes into the at-bats from Ben Zobrist, and usually come out with a smart outcome. Some either it's a line drive or a ball that he wants to hit to a certain area. It's well thought out, and it is fun to watch. You're right. We haven't talked about it. I don't think a lot of people have talked about it, but he's been a hugely important player for them, especially, as you put it, with Bryant out for this extended period and Rizzo out earlier in the year. When he wasn't out, he was ineffective. So it takes a whole community to win baseball games, and the Cubs seem to have that community.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in St. Louis with Dexter Fowler, because I'm sure that people were talking with Joe about this, and maybe even some of the guys in the clubhouse too. What do you think look, Dexter's not hitting well. He's not. He hasn't played well, and maybe he has a lot of stuff on his mind. Just had a new baby girl today. Is on paternity leave from the Cardinals. What are people in that clubhouse saying about what's happening with Dexter down in STL?
Well, I can't tell you what they're saying in the clubhouse. I can only tell you what Mozeliak said, the president and GM. We know that. It's on the record. He said it on a Fox TV show that he does every week in St. Louis that people like Dexter are going to have to look in the mirror about their effort, and that he should take some time off here for the next few days and you know, figure out where he's at, and he's going to sit down and talk to him about where he's at. Dexter's been a huge disappointment there, and it just didn't start now. If you remember last year, he went there to be their leadoff man, and he wasn't successful in doing that. On top of that, the Cardinal offense failed miserably to the point where they had no power in the lineup. And eventually, with Dexter not getting on base like he normally did, they dropped him down in the order to get more of a power bat, a doubles and home run bat out of him. He had a, you know, a very average to below average year. And, you know, he doesn't run anymore. So he doesn't run anymore. The on-base percentage, you know, kind of fluctuated. Now he can't hit. You know, this is tough times for him. He's in the second year of a five-year, $82.5 million deal. And I think, you know, I wrote a story on 670thescore.com that you can go and look at. And the reason he was successful here, other than his obvious talents, was that Joe Maddon and Davey Martinez every single day, Lawrence said, you go, we go. In other words, how you play, we're going to play. You start it all at your first at bat, and everybody takes off from there. So he was the energizer here. He was a synergistic force for the Chicago Cubs. But the handling that he has in St. Louis is nothing close to the handling that he had with the Cubs, where he was loved and handled perfectly. Look at Dexter's career. When you have time, Lawrence, look at his career and see how many games he has not played, okay? It's been a career where he's averaged somewhere around 120 games a season. So there's been lots of times on the DL for Dexter. I think he played 153 games in 2016, going toward his free agent year. 2015,
156 56 games. Before that, his high was 143 in Colorado.
Yeah, and before that, they were all 120s, 130s. Nothing higher than that. So from, you know, the average games played for Dexter is about 120 games in his career. I think he played 105 last year, right, Lawrence? Somewhere around there?
Last season was 118 for Dexter.
118. So, you know, look at the volume of games that he's missed over the years. Not his fault. I'm not blaming him, but he hasn't been able to stand up to a full season of playing other than that one year, the 156, the 143. The rest are all 120s and 130s. So I think they overpaid for Dexter Fowler in years. I think he's a valuable guy if he's handled correctly. He was handled perfectly by the Chicago Cubs. He was loved by his teammates. They loved him back. But that is not the dynamic that's going on in St. Louis right now.
No, it really isn't, Bruce. And I tell you, when he signed there, I was like, that's not a good place for you. The way that place is run, and I'm not a big fan of Mike Matheny and the way that he manages. And I just felt like some of the atmosphere issues, the idea of the Cardinals and the Cardinal way and the best fans in baseball and all that stuff, I didn't think that it was a really particularly good fit. But if they're offering you $80 million, then maybe you're willing to put up with it. I wonder if there's some regret on both sides of that deal now.
How many guys after 31 live up to 5 and 7 year contracts?
Not many, if any.
I know.
Other than John Lester.
Know.
He's
been dynamite, but, you know, they're few and far between. Why don't they live up to 5 and 7 year contracts? I think you and I have talked about this before, because they're getting paid for what they did, not what they're able to do going forward, because their best years are behind them. Not only that, but the pressure, you know, on them to perform for 5 or 6 years, like we're watching Yu Darvish right now trying to perform for 5 or 6 years in, you know, 8 starts. you know, that pressure is too much for some people. Living up to $126 million, too much for some people. People said it was, for Hayward, it was too rough living up to $84 million or $184 million. You know, John Lester talked about the pressure he put on himself coming here, and look at how beautifully he's performed. They're few and far between. So I think in the case of Dexter Fowler, it was a case of giving a baseball athlete too many years for what his record indicated, and not getting the same type of treatment that he got in Chicago in his time with St. Louis. I think it's very underrated how well players are treated by the Epstein, Hoyer, and Joe Maddon regime. It's talked about, but I don't think you could ever overrate it. It's so essentially important to the success there.
Bruce, as always, I appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a great night, Lawrence.
That's Bruce Levine. He'll be covering the Cubs game tomorrow. We will have the Cubs here on the Score on the 4th of July after Kevin Zipak is done. Zipak will be leading you up to Cubs pre tomorrow. Good for him. This hour being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. And Northwestern football. Coach Fitz and the Music City Bowl champs host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. I want to talk a little bit about the Dexter Fowler thing. We'll do that after a timeout. You're listening to The Score. Yo, after I'm done, Julie DeCaro is going to take over the microphone. And we get a Julie and Maggie show tomorrow? Baby. That's what I'm talking about. Oh, no, they got one of them long-ass shows tomorrow. They'll be on, I'm guessing they'll get on the air 5. Well, that's not too bad. They'll be on from 5 until 9 tomorrow. But Julie Solo coming up at 10 o'clock tonight. You heard me and Bruce talking about what's going on with Dexter Fowler and the Cardinals. And when he signed down there, I felt like, ugh, I know they're offering you the money, but maybe that's not where you want to be. I have a genuine affection for Dexter. I really like him. In the time that I got to cover him here with the Cubs, I always found him personable. I always found him available. I always found him accountable. When things weren't going right, although things seemed to be going pretty great when Dexter was a Cub, he wanted to come back here. They figured out a way to bring him back. It was the big surprise. And it turned out great. I got the chance to meet his family a little bit. They're delightful. They just had another baby today. That's why Dexter is away from the team right now, and maybe that's part of the reason that he hasn't had a great season, that he's stressing about having another kid. I don't know. We were talking yesterday about the idea that these guys are human, and we, as much as we want to turn them into robots, they're not. The GM of the Cardinals had some very pointed words for Dexter Fowler. I want you to hear those words. Who was this on with? Whose podcast was this on, Mike?
Monday's with Mo, so Mozeliak has...
It's his own thing.
Yeah, each Monday he comes on and talks Cardinals baseball.
Okay, so this wasn't like you call up a station and you get someone trying to throw you off with a question. This is his own show. This is what he said about Dexter Fowler.
You know Dexter Fowler very well. He's having a tough year. There's no other way to put it. How do you try to get him going, Mo? What do you do from a Cardinal standpoint to try to get him on the right track?
Yeah, I would agree. It's been a frustrating year for everybody involved. And here's a guy that wants to go out and play well. I think he would tell you it's hard to do that when you're not playing.
Exactly.
And not playing on a consistent basis. But I've also had a lot of people come up to me and question his effort and his energy level. And, you know, those are things that I can't defend What I can defend is trying to create opportunities for him, but not if it's at the expense of someone that's out there hustling and playing hard. And I think really everybody just needs to take a hard look in the mirror and decide, you know, what they want that next chapter to look like. And in Dexter's case, you know, maybe taking just a brief time out, trying to reassess himself and then give him a chance for a strong second half is probably what's best for everybody. So I'm hopeful to touch base with him in the near future and really just decide what makes the most sense. But clearly, he's not playing at the level we had hoped.
Those are some pointed words from a general manager. Wow. I think that there is a level of fan appreciation that feels like, oh, well, you know, sometimes if a guy's playing bad, then the GM or the coach should feel comfortable enough saying that the guy is playing bad. I get that. I do wonder, though, if you have a coach or a general manager publicly talking about a guy's effort level, if that's something that gets around, if that's something that makes guys go, you shouldn't go play there. It's not fun. The whole Cardinals vibe doesn't seem fun unless you're winning. Like this idea that Matheny has brought in all of the is a continuation of all the La Russa stuff without the genius. If you're the La Russa genius, then yes, you can do some of this stuff. The way that they do things, and they do things the right way, and we don't like music in the clubhouse and all of this stuff. Like it seems so boring and so unappealing, which is why I was like, why did Dexter sign down there? You're going to have a problem down there. I hope that he is better. And I hope that he ends up enjoying his time in St. Louis. Because it seems like he's on a team with a bunch of dudes that he's having a great time with. They do believe in what Bruce said to me. It really stuck with me. That the way that he's being treated, or the way he was treated as a Cub, is important. That the way that the Cubs as an organization now treat players is important and appealing. I think the Cardinals are going to have to answer a lot of hard questions over the next 3 months. What are they going to do with the trade deadline? What are they going to do about the manager? I know a lot of people don't think managers matter. I think they have an awful manager. And I've said so repeatedly for years. And it's funny because Cardinals fans will clap back on you talking about the tradition of the St. Louis Cardinals, but they all agree about Matheny. If you go, yeah, but your manager's bad, and they go, yeah, we kind of know. But birds on the bat, some guy texts it here. We're the second best organization in baseball behind the Yankees. Traditionally, you may have an argument. Not over the last 5 years. Meanwhile, in the division that you used to rule, you have been surpassed by both the Cubs and the Brewers. Joe Maddon was on the Midday Show earlier today. He had some thoughts on Dexter. This is Joe talking about the "you go, we go" slogan with Dexter.
First of all, that's the Cardinals talking about one of their players right now. I could talk to you about Dexter, okay, about how I feel about Dex. I mean, we got a great relationship. We stay in touch sometimes during the off season. While he was here, we had a ton of conversations, and you go, we go. That's what I told him for those couple years that he was here, and I meant it, and it was true.
Now, Joe hates people being in Cubs business. He's done that before. With the Pirates, you stay out of our business, we'll stay out of yours. I get that. But I did think it was interesting that he wanted to make clear his feelings on Dexter Fowler. And he talked with the guys about that.
That's a tough spot, no doubt. And again, that's their business. It's not ours. I really try to refrain from commenting on other groups and how they do their jobs or their how they perceive their actions, whatever, within that group. I have no business being St. Louis's anything.
He's right. I understand that. But this is also a player that he knows well. And I'm glad that he at least, you know, wanted to say some things about Dexter, even if he doesn't want to talk about the particular situation that the Cardinals are in with Dex. It makes me sad, honestly, for him. Now, I know that people don't have sympathy for guys who are making $80 million, guaranteed. But it makes me sad that a guy that, like, one of the lasting images of the Cubs winning the World Series is Dexter Fowler's smile. And you just feel like he's going to work now, like, God, I hate this place. It's terrible. Fans have been awful to me, awful to my family. Going after his wife's ethnicity. He's supposed to be the best fans in baseball, right? More from Madden on Fowler, the guy.
Lights up the room. Great conversation. A great teammate. So that's how I know Dex. So however the reporting on him in St. Louis, that's their business. I'm just telling you that Dexter I know is he's a wonderful teammate and a good friend.
Things to keep in mind as this continues. There are a couple things that Joe Madden said that I wanted to get into as I move around the studio. I forgot what they were, Mike, or else I would just cue you for them. I forgot what they were. They were interesting. Here, I'll find them now. I think I have them labeled as Joe, date Joe 1 and 2 on here. I know I'm doing the show, like producing the show while the show is going on, when I should have just gone to break because I'm already over time. You found them? I don't even know what the cuts are. What are the cuts?
One is on framing stats.
Ah, yes.
And then the other one is Cubs weird all-star break.
Yes. Okay. Let's start with the weird all-star break first. That Joe, because, you know, the Cubs are coming back. They're playing in San Diego, then there's the All-Star game. Then the Cubs and the Cardinals play a 6:05 game. They're the only game on the schedule. And they come back on Wednesday night? Thursday night. They come back on Thursday night, and they're the only game on schedule. Joe and the Cubs, not happy about that.
It is a tough schedule. I don't understand the method of having to play one game. It's really not fair to the group that has to participate. An easy answer for me would be to play that last Sunday night ESPN game, play closer to where the All-Star game's being played. Very simple. And then the travel for those players is minimal. I think it's more concerning about traveling for the guys participating in the Sunday night game, having to get to the All-Star game on, for Monday. So just, you know, set it up closer. I don't like it. I really don't. I don't like it for a lot of different reasons. You hear me talk about rest all the time, and the fact that you really have to cut short. It's a kind of a 2-day event now, as opposed to a 3-day event when you have 4 days off, because we got to get back to Chicago in time to play the Thursday night game. It's a bad practice. I hope it goes away after this year.
Yeah, and the Cubs have had a couple of weird scheduling issues this year, like the Sunday night game before Memorial Day, where they play on ESPN, and then they had to go to Pittsburgh and play like a noon first pitch. And I don't think they got to Pittsburgh until 3 in the morning after that. And then they have this crazy all-star break thing. The other thing that came out of the conversation with the afternoon show was, and I've actually heard this before from Joe. I threw it up on my Instagram the last time I was over at Wrigley Field. He was talking about this in one of his pregame press conferences. So when I heard the question, I knew exactly where he was going to go with this. And it's the idea of Wilson Contreras being ranked low in pitch framing. Joe Maddon hates that.
Honestly, I think those numbers are a lot of bunk, quite frankly. I think Wilson's one of the best catchers in all of baseball, might be the best. We have pitchers that have command issues, and he's being judged by pitchers that haven't thrown a lot of strikes. And furthermore, there's matchups with different umpires and right and left-handedness from the pitchers. Umpires see things differently. And with all of that, on top of all that, there's times that, according to these numerical data, Wilson will have a great game, like a game of, you know, Johnny Bench, Gabby Hartnett type of a game, and then there's others that it goes the other direction. I don't have a lot of faith in zone ratings and the catching kind of stuff either. We're walking people because we're missing by a lot, and I really have a hard time blaming the catcher there, quite frankly.
I'm with Joe on this. I still don't think that defensive metrics are great, and pitch framing, I think, can be very subjective. And he's right. When you look at what their staff has done, there's been some real control and command issues. So, man, that was a good 45 minutes of Cubs chatter right there. I'm sure Julie is going to do some of that on her show as well. We'll come back and talk with her next and set you up for her show here on The Score. Julie DeCaro is in the house, y'all. She's going to be on tonight, 10 until midnight. Jules, this is strange having the 4th of July on a Wednesday.
Like, I know.
I said to someone today, I think it was Dean Davis who were in here, and I said, oh, man, what are you guys doing this weekend? And then I was like, wait a minute, it's Tuesday.
I know.
July 5th is going to be terrible for people.
I'm working tonight, tomorrow, and July 5th. By Friday, it's going to feel like next Wednesday.
And there's got to be a Julie and Maggie show on Saturday, right?
There is, and there's one tomorrow, too.
I'm excited about that. You guys will be on after Cubs, so I'm hoping for a long game, and you guys will be on from 5 until 9.
Just in time to see the fireworks.
Yeah, that works out like right down. Is it the 3rd or the 4th? I can't remember what one day we now have fireworks downtown.
I don't know because I can't find the taste of Chicago anymore. It used to take up all of Millennium Park. Now I have no idea where it is.
Is it going on now?
Well, stuff is blocked off.
Oh.
But it used to be so big you couldn't miss it.
No, you're
now
right.
There's like nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't think I'm going to come back down here tomorrow anyway.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
It's probably a bad idea.
You really shouldn't come down.
I think I'll just stick in Hyde Park and just see what happens. Maybe go see a movie tomorrow. I want to go see the Mr. Rogers movie.
Yes. You know, actually, my husband's high school friend is the guy who wrote the book that was based on that. I'm very proud of you. I'm so proud of you or whatever it's called.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So
sounds like a podcast guest to me.
You know, I was saying the other day, I think the only reason that Generation X is as well adjusted as we are is because we spend so much time with Mr. Rogers.
I find myself, I know that when I go see that, I'm going to be a bawling mess because of just how genuinely decent that man was. That you came home and there was this nice guy on TV that was like trying to teach you stuff and didn't do it in a condescending way, like let you into his world a little bit, and it seemed like he was having fun. And I don't know, like I'm looking forward to it because I was very appreciative of a lot of those shows. I mean, I'm sure that the kids now have their shows like that too, but whether it was, you know, 3-2-1 Contact,
Electric Company, Morgan Freeman taught me how to read.
Yeah, or Sesame Street.
Yeah,
Mr. Hooper's. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that you're learning. Muppets, like it's. But Mr. Rogers, I was in Pittsburgh, and you can go to Mr. Rogers' house and stuff out there, and he is revered there. And I think that for a generation of us, that guy and the way that he did his TV show was just. Just nice. Like, it was really nice. Like, it's just a nice man.
There was a really interesting article in Slate about the way he talked to children and how he had come up with his own sort of language that he worked with psychologists and child psychologists to do it. So instead of saying, don't play in the street, they go through this whole series of, like, turn this around, take the negativity out of it and realize that not all kids have parents, you know, and just go through. So at the end, what you'll say is your favorite adult can tell you where it's safe to play instead of don't play in the streets. Mm. And there's like 10 steps that go through it to get it to that point. And it was really fascinating.
Or if you look at it had been circulating over the last like few months, him addressing Congress.
I've never seen that.
There's him addressing Congress talking about public television and the importance of public television. Just a decent man. And I'm looking forward to crying my eyes out and celebrating his decency. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think that's something we could use a little bit more of.
I agree. I just feel like right now things are so terrible. I feel like the void would just be too much to handle.
The void
of him not being here and of having no one really having stepped into that role.
Oh, and you like watching it and then being like, oh, that's bad.
I guess I'll go back to the way things are now.
Well, maybe we look at it because we're adults that there isn't someone for us because we're not looking. Like maybe that is Dora for kids now. Maybe that is that Caillou dude.
No, it's not Caillou. It's definitely not Caillou. Trust me. Good Lord.
What was the show that your boys watched when they were growing up?
They were pretty into Dora. We watched a lot of PBS. So we did a lot of Clifford, and like there was a really cool science show called George Shrinks that we loved. And we went to see the Wiggles at the Rosemont, and it was like the Beatles were in town. And it was
really
the parents, not the kids.
Really?
I mean, the kids were excited, but the parents were losing their minds when the Wiggles came on stage.
Are your kids like were they old? Were they too young for or too old for Teletubbies?
Yes.
Okay. They like probably like just missed Teletubbies.
I never would have let them watch Teletubbies in the first place because that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Because it's just too hard to follow?
It's just stupid. It's like, I don't even know what half the stuff is they're trying to get at. I mean, like Sesame Street and, you know, Electric Company, everything had a point. That's just brain garbage.
Yeah.
I will say, when they got to the point where they were over Thomas the Tank Engine and into, like, Scooby-Doo, I was so excited. Because I'll watch Scooby-Doo all day long.
Well, there's some good stuff in Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo's great.
I mean, there's the, you know.
Inside jokes.
Tons of it. And the pot smoking. I mean, come on.
That's the inside joke I'm talking about.
I mean, the Scooby snacks.
Fred and Daphne always off together.
Yeah.
Poor Velma by herself.
Yeah. Smart one. And I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you darn kids.
Yeah, when they got off of Thomas the Tank Engine and into Dinosaurs and Scooby-Doo hit at the same time. And I was like, all right, now we're talking.
What was your kind of go-to when you were a kid?
I loved Muppet Babies. I loved Bugs Bunny. I mean, my dad would come down and watch Warner Brothers with us, you know. And so we were always watching Bugs Bunny. And it's super violent. And
it's hard now.
Wildly inappropriate in so many places.
Yes. And I mean, like you watch like Tom and Jerry now.
Oh, Tom and Jerry's so bad.
Like the old, like not the, hey, we might want to change the mammy character and now like give her a British accent.
What about the one where Tom is like a 20s like jazz guy? He's like, is you ain't my baby.
You know what? Maybe it's cultural appropriation. I still love that. Any episode where Tom talks, I'm down. I'm down with it. Anyone where whether he's singing or he's talking, I'm good with it.
What about Jerry's uncle? Like Froggy went to court and he could
Uncle Pecos, right?
Yes, Uncle Pecos, that's right.
Uncle Pecos would come through.
That's great stuff.
Take your whisker for a guitar string.
So terrible. That's so great.
I swear, I'm going to see if I can find this, but I remember this from my childhood and I remember like looking around. Two things that are completely inappropriate. One of them from Bugs Bunny, the other one from the Flintstones. There's this episode of the Flintstones where Fred has been deceiving Wilma and Wilma catches him. So she decides that she's going to deceive him. So she starts crying and like she's wearing like mascara or like a fake or something. And he's like, oh, well, you're clearly not blah, 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 because I can tell. And then she starts really crying and he's like, stop crying. The neighbors are going to think I'm beating you.
Oh, great.
And I remember being a kid and going, whoa. And there's the Bugs Bunny bit where he's with Elmer Fudd and he has him on a game like Bugs is playing Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
Like a Groucho Marx-esque character. And the name of the show is Have You Stopped Beating Your Wife?
Nice.
Because the question is an impossible question to answer.
Right, right.
And it's just like, dude, like some of this stuff you go back over as an adult and you go, what the hell were we watching?
I'm going to stick with like the Wagner, Chuck Jones, like the operas.
But I mean, knowing what we know about Wagner, not great. Not great.
But it still has Bugs riding down on that super fat horse, which is probably my favorite image ever.
It's probably the best GIF. It's good stuff. I agree. What are you going to do on the show tonight?
We're going to start off talking a little Bears with Mark Grody. And,
oh, nice.
Yes. And coming up a little bit later on, Tony Andracki will be here to do some Cubs stuff. We're going to take stock at the halfway point, how Cubs and Sox fans are feeling.
Can I get a preview? How are you feeling?
I am a solid B+.
Good.
Yeah, I think so.
They've rallied, I think, to get you to a B+.
Well, I know they were concerned. Theo's been texting me for days.
When are we going to get that grade, Jules? We're going to get that grade. We're working hard. We're doing extra credit.
And then I have to say, you know, Theo, this is very awkward. Come on. Like, don't put me in this position.
Yeah, like, don't do this to me. Like, you know, like, we're the home of the Cubs. You're the president of the Cubs.
Don't be texting me at home, man.
Yeah.
Like,
wait, yeah. Come on. What's up with that? Julie, I'm looking forward to your show on the ride home. Thanks to everyone who listened to the show tonight. Thanks to Herbie and Mike for all their hard work. We had a good time tonight, and I appreciate you being a part of it. Enjoy your fireworks tonight and tomorrow, and hopefully everything that you hear go pow in the night is a firework. Peace out.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.